Here's Brian Colangelo. Hello, Brian.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
So if I sign Trey Johnson, his name has double meaning.
Exactly.
Very good.
Very nice.
There you go.
Well done.
An entire team of Johnsons.
Yeah, that's right.
Not bad.
Not bad, but no, good result last night. Obviously, you know, someone pointed out, I saw today, that we seem to save our best efforts for some of the best teams in the league, and we've had some quality wins. We just haven't been able to be real consistent with that this year, and that's the sign of a young team. We haven't had enough to fortitude, I guess, to close out games, but for the most part, we like what is taking place with these young guys. We keep talking about the plan of developing the young core players, you know, creating the space and flexibility going forward so we have some options in free agency, and then obviously preserving our high draft status. And that is one of the benefits or silver linings to losing some of these games. It's not something that you preach or you know, practice. You try to win every game, but if it's not in the cards, you roll with it and you learn from it and you win with a purpose or lose with a purpose in this case. So that's where we are.
So I'd be lying to you if I said I knew, before you made the trade, I knew anything about James Johnson. I really didn't.
Okay.
Just a guy, you know, heard the name, but it didn't play much for the Bulls. Went down to the D League, I guess, for a little while.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I must confess to you that when I looked at the trade initially, I said, okay, so you deal a 29th or whatever it is pick for a guy who was a 16, and I know there's cap issues and contracts and expirations and things like that, but having said that, my first reaction was, well, why would the Bulls do that unless they didn't think much of this guy? So what was it that triggered it for you?
Well, you know, let me first comment on their aspect of it. You know, they drafted him at 16.
Right.
Thought enough of him that, you know, that was their selection. He was a pretty high prospect coming out of school, and one of the issues that might have been a concern with him were, you know, maybe discipline, maturity, weight, things like that, but no one disputed his talent. He was a very talented player at Wake Forest and did a lot of things, and he's a very versatile player. He's also a tough kid. He comes with a fighting background in martial arts, a champion, if you will, world champion. I know his father was a kickboxer. And the bottom line is we were intrigued by him for a number of reasons. He gets to Chicago, and maybe he's not practicing all the things that they were hoping he would practice in terms of those disciplines, and you know, maybe got a little lazy even, and fell out of favor. They had a coaching change. The new coach comes in, and Lowell Deng is playing, I think, some of his best basketball of his career, and he's out of the rotation, and it's a situation, in my opinion, what you're going to see here in the next few days. They're probably going to take the flexibility that they've created by, they're still under the cap a little bit.
Yeah.
This now creates even that much more cap space, and now they're going to have the ability to go out and sign someone if there's a buyout or something to that effect. And they're getting a pick, which is an asset, and they can use it in some other regard. I just know that from our standpoint, we're looking at a list. I'm looking at it on my board right here of 30 to 45 players that are in this draft class, and there's nobody at 28 or 29, which is where the Miami pick was at this moment, that is going to supersede his talent level or even remotely come close to it. I would also tell you that we're such a young basketball team right now that the thought and idea of adding two first-round picks next year, our own pick and then the Miami pick, to an already young group is not you know, the most tantalizing thing if you're looking at, you know, taking this thing a step further. And I think James Johnson, who's got now a year and a half of development and a learning curve already, he's ready to step in and play and contribute, where we don't have that learning curve with that 28th, 29th pick anymore. We've got him, and he's going to be with us, and we're going to work him right into the plan here. So,
now, Brian, you mentioned the draft class. It was interesting reading a lot of the stories around the deadline and various people who either acquired picks or dump picks. You know, several unnamed NBA executives quoted in stories saying we hate this draft. That there's just that people were unloading picks because they just don't like it. That they don't think there's much there.
It's a class you've got to hate. It's not a star-driven class. I don't think there's a lot of players that you're going to say years from now, wow, that guy is, you know, a star out of that draft. But there's going to be a lot of impact players. I think we're going to get a pretty good player with our top pick. I wasn't so convinced that that was going to be the case with 28 or 29. And with the unknowns of the CBA, I can't really talk a lot about that, but I would think that there's going to be a number of kids that say, you know what, if I'm not at the top of the draft, I'm probably going to stay in school or, you know, continue to develop my game. I might be able to play myself into a higher draft position the following year.
But having said that, have you not already acknowledged that you're willing to talk about moving your other first-round pick, the one you have left?
No, I think I was pretty clear that, you know, we wanted to hold on to that thing. I had plenty of opportunities to move it in this last 24, 48 hours, 72 hours. Everybody wanted the pick. I had some interesting deals pop up that I thought were worth at least evaluation and an examination. And every time we came to the same conclusion that it wasn't worth giving up that pick right now. That would be a tough sell, I think, to the general public and even to the board right now, given that we've put a plan in place and we're sticking to that plan because I think that's the way to go right now.
But isn't a factor in this, it is a lottery pick, and as we all know, and as you know better than anybody, anything can happen when you start spinning those ping pong balls.
Exactly. You know, we'll know more the results of the lottery sometime in early May. I think it's the 17th, if I'm not mistaken. The other aspect of it is once we do have a value on the pick, trade season is not over necessarily for the year.
Of course.
It's over for now until teams end their regular season or play their final playoff game, and all non-playoff teams can resume trading. So we'll have from the end of the regular season, per se, through June 30th to pursue deals, and that includes the utilization of the possible utilization of the trade exception from Bosch. There's a 9.126 balance on that right now, so we'll still have some flexibility with regard to bringing somebody in. Another interesting note is that while deals that happen now, acquisition of contracts go on to your cap and tax calculation, deals that happen after the last day of the regular season do not affect the tax calculation. So we'll be in a better position to maybe even acquire a player or a contract that might shoot our number up over that number, but it won't affect us tax-wise. So it's one more element to the discussion that we may or may not use the trade exception. You know, I could also just say that we've used the trade exception to the extent that it's helped us acquire Bayless, it's helped us acquire now James Johnson. We got back our second-round pick from Dallas, cash considerations, and Ajinsa in the deal that we made with Dallas. So, you know, we've used it in small piecemeal deals, but it's being utilized to try to move this thing forward, acquisition of assets, more flexibility, et cetera, because it was the vehicle that allowed us to unload the Jack contract and get that flexibility for the summer.
Real quickly, and I know you probably don't want to talk much about this, but here is my assessment of your contractual situation, and tell me why it's wrong. I thought that if you were going to be back, you would have signed by now, and that the fact that you haven't signed suggests to me that there's an ever-increasing chance that Brian Colangelo is going someplace else. Tell me that's not true, or is true, or is irrelevant.
I think it's irrelevant. I think right now, as I said last night in a little gathering of the press, you know, that'll be addressed at the right time. Right now is not the right time. When we get to it, we will get to it. I'm not worried about it. I'm more concerned right now about making this basketball team better and seeing this plan through.
And would you say the right time then is the traditional time, which would be in the, say, 2 weeks after the regular season ends?
The right time is the right time. So we will get to it when it's appropriate.
Okay. We appreciate your time as always. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.